The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the award-winning MG4, the no-compromise electric hatchback with a 450-kilometre range. Recharge your soul.
We're going to get in touch. We spoke earlier to a number of people in and around Coolock. So I spent a bit of time there earlier this afternoon, up and around the Crown Paints site that has been the epicentre of those violent scenes and those arson attacks you would have seen over recent days. And down in Coolock Village as well, speaking to people about not just the issues at the site, but the deeper issues felt in the community. You know, when we hear about legitimate concerns, and look, should always be acknowledged, there are people who hide behind so-called legitimate concerns, but there are people with legitimate concerns around services in the area. And as somebody put it over the weekend, and again, apologies to who it was, I can't remember who said it, but I thought it was perfectly put, angry about all the right things, but with all the wrong people. And that was certainly the sense that I got there earlier. And if you want to listen back to what different people had to say, including some of those people supporting the protest, it's available as a podcast on the News Talk app. Mary Lou McDonald is with me now. Uachtaráin Thian Féin. Mary Lou, you're welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kieran.
How do you reflect on the scenes that we have seen in Coolock over the last almost 1 week?
With a very, very heavy heart. I just think the whole situation, on the one hand, clearly the violence, the burning of mattresses, the burning of the building, the injury to the security officer, the injuries to members of An Garda Síochána, the stories of people down there, pepper sprayed, elderly people, young people. The whole thing is just a cause of huge concern. I mean, let me be clear, the violence and those perpetrating it is to be absolutely condemned. And that condemnation is important. It's important that all of us face down anyone who engages in that kind of criminal behaviour. Those also who are there, who are stirring up fear, division and hatred, quite frankly. But it's equally important that we recognise that condemnation is not going to, on its own, won't sort this out. That we need to accept that in the wider community, some people down there demonstrating or protesting, others who aren't, there is a real sense of anger, a sense of betrayal, a sense that this community, and this is a proud community, just remember, only a short number of weeks ago, this is the community that after 43 long years got an apology for the loss of 48 lives in the Stardust tragedy. So many of those young lives, they were Coolock kids. This is a resilient community. It's also a community that has been left behind for generations by successive governments, and they know it. And so, therefore, the experience of not being heard is just so unacceptable to them. So I was in the community, as you're probably aware, and I met with an interesting cross-section of people.
Yeah.
And to a woman and a man, they reflected that anger. They said, look, it's not that we are not a mob. We are not far-right lunatics. We are people living in our community, doing our best in a scenario where resources are stretched so tight, in fact, where things have been so badly underfunded for so long, that we hear news of newcomers to the community and we ask, how in the name of God do we cater for that when the facilities, basic facilities that we require for the kids that are in the area now, for our own kids, we don't have them. And I cannot emphasize enough that we need to listen and respond to that experience. And by the way, this is not about pandering to anything, pandering to racism, pandering to hate. Far from it. I would not do that for anything in this world, because that would be very, very dangerous and debilitating to our society. But let me say, it is equally dangerous and debilitating not to listen to the real experiences of marginalised and poorer communities on the ground, because to simply condemned to simply, as has happened, call names or stigmatise an entire community. That is equally socially dangerous. So it's for that reason, Ciarán, that I reached out to the Taoiseach. I wrote him a letter. I think the letter was very blunt in my assessment and what I had heard from the community. And I know full well that to actually sort this out, yes, the Gardaí need to be equipped to do the job. The firefighters, all of, of the above, those, the small minority, particularly people from outside the area who are in openly stirring up division and hate, need to be faced down. But critically, there has to be dialogue and engagement with the wildlife.
And how does that manifest? What does it look like? So when I was out there, I was speaking to Jess and Henry, who's just a recently elected councillor, who talked about a meeting in April and the shortcomings of that meeting. It was very much, here's the plan and we're not really taking any questions on it. At the same time, I know kind of people who defend the government on this front say it's a difficult balance to strike because you don't want to give people a veto on, you know, who moves into the neighbourhood either. So, I mean, how do you imagine it working?
But you see, let's be clear about this. It's not about vetoes. And I just think that's too convenient for the government to say, well, we couldn't talk to you because we didn't want to give you a veto. They didn't talk to people or dialogue with people because they chose not to do so, because they know full well that when you go into Coolock, you are going into a place that has so many shortfalls in funding, so many asks and needs, whether it's for, you know, facilities for local football clubs. I'm talking about basic things, you know, like changing rooms, whether it's...
But what would you say? What would you say to people in Coolock if you were Taoiseach today that would diffuse that protest and stop people barricading the front of Crown Paints?
Had I been the decision maker at the very, very beginning of the process, I would have insisted on a structured engagement and dialogue with the wide community. I would have come in knowing full well that where you put a new facility with new people coming into the community, you have to assist the community in transition and you have to meet any of the service and resource shortfalls that there are. And
listen, but what would you have said if the response of that community, I'm just curious, like what would you have said if they had said, well, I'm sorry, but these are people are rapists and paedophiles and we don't want them in our community? Because that's what the barricades say. That's what's literally printed across the front of Crown Paints today. Rapists out, paedophiles out. They're talking about immigrants they've never met.
Exactly.
There's no message up about GPs.
Exactly. But those conversations have to be had. That's what dialogue is about. Dialogue is a two-way street. And for people in the community who have formed these views, who have these fears, however irrational or offensive others might regard them, the only way that you deal with that is by talking about that and examining that and pushing back in some cases against that. You don't deal with it by saying, no, I'm not talking to you because you're looking for a veto. It's a crazy approach. It makes absolutely no rational sense. And let me tell you this also. Coolock is like so many other communities, rural and urban, right across the country. If you do the work, you will go into any community and you'll find the community leaders. You find the people in sports, in youth work, in community development, in the residents' association. You'll find the people who have raised their kids or looking after their grandkids in the community. And it is not hard to actually structure a community dialogue. There's people all across this country who are experts in mediating this. But you have to start from a position of respect and acknowledgement of the community. And if you're to boil it all down and say, where did this go so terribly wrong? That's the seed of the issue. And there are people in the community who don't want the facility there. They make no secret of that. But bear in mind, they're at that position and articulating that position in circumstances. And I'm sure I haven't heard your broadcast, but I'd be astonished if they didn't say to you at some point, people on the ground, nobody came and spoke to us. There was absolutely no dialogue. And secondly, where is our resources? What about the kids that we have here? Should they have nothing? So those things need to be dealt with. And the reality is, the absolute reality is, to protect social cohesion, to look after our communities, and to get this right, dialogue and engagement are at the centre of this. And trying to, you know, avoid that or give some kind of lame excuse for not doing that around vetoes, frankly, doesn't cut, in my opinion.
Is that job of engagement and, well, not necessarily the job of engagement, the idea that you enunciate there of kind of winning people over through community leaders, do you suspect that's gotten more difficult in recent times? You know, with say the advent of social media or Telegram groups and all these alternative kind of sources of information. So some of the people I spoke to there, like what they wanted to talk about was kind of, you know, Charles Schwab and kind of eradicating the white race and the World Economic Forum deciding everything. And, you know, while I have you here, kind of Oprah Winfrey keeps her youthful figure by kind of consuming children's blood. Like that was one of the things that somebody told me, you know, I'm not saying that's representative of the views of kind of people in Coolock who've got an issue with what's happening on the site or community dialogue. But at the same time, it was more than one person who was saying these things out there, and all of them really keen to talk about COVID being a hoax. Certainly the people are kind of close to the barricades up there. And I just wonder, again, do you suspect, again, to kind of to repeat the question, does all of that make winning people over harder? That where they used to maybe, in the example you give, listen to the granny who kind of raised the grandkids and everybody knows, now they're listening to some English citizen journalist who was asking me questions there today.
Yeah. So I think it's important that we distinguish between different groups of people. I mean, I don't know people in Coolock who would entertain the notion of Oprah Winfrey keeping her youthful figure by consuming children's blood. If they're out there, I haven't met them. I mean, these are sensible people. This is a community, as I said earlier, that has been through a lot, and who knows how things work in this country, and who know that their community is left behind time and again and again. It's like the same story run again and again, and they're fed up with it. They're sick of it. So there are some who hold those views, that is certainly a minority. I'm not denying that they're there, but I think it would be wrong to portray again the issue in the community as coming from those sort of more outlandish ideas. However, on the issue of social media, and I am an advocate for free speech, I think it's really important that people have platforms. There's something wonderfully liberating and democratic about social media, because people have access to information and connections with each other that certainly was not the case in previous generations. All of that is fantastically good. But the algorithm of these platforms means, almost like if you go on online shopping and you purchase something, you say, well, the last person who purchased this also purchased shoes in the same color. Do you like them? It's like the repetitive nature of the same content being run again and again and again, and no alternative or balancing view. And it can lead people to imagine that actually this is the single reality. This is the only perspective. This is how it is. And that's incredibly dangerous. And I think we really have to have now a really serious conversation with those social media providers and their algorithms. It's a retail commercial algorithm to sell things that's being applied to these platforms, and that can create
Do you think we let them off the hook a bit in these conversations?
Yes, we do. I definitely, I firmly believe that we do. And I think that these platforms have to be open, democratic spaces for people to say and hold whatever view they wish. This is a democratic society. But I think when something is rigged to such an extent that it is a bombardment of the same again, I think that's really problematic. And speaking as a public representative, by the way, those of us who produce political content, I have a whole a huge number of followers, for example, on Facebook. The algorithm limits and in some cases blocks even people who choose to follow me, because presumably they want to know what I'm up to or what I'm saying, they don't see the content from me, but they will see all sorts of other stuff. So it's problematic. And I think we need to deal with it very honestly and decisively without trespassing for a second on people's rights to a freedom of expression and to follow and listen to and figure things out and balance things out in their own heads. But the algorithm is hugely problematic. And I think all of us in political life and people in activism are very well aware of that.
Dr. Hugh Fein, Mary Lou MacDonald. Mary Lou, thanks for joining us here on the show. Robin Tralee says, I hope Mary Lou is also criticising those who perpetrate violence against Gardaí. In fairness, Rob, I think she did that right at the outset. Mary Lou's out of touch. It doesn't matter how much dialogue is spoken. Nobody in Coolock wants them end off, says somebody. Once again, Newstalk tries to reduce anti-settlement opinion to concern over services. It isn't. It's about the whole mass immigration project of the ruling classes, which promises to reduce Irish people to a minority in their homeland before 2050 and erase Irish nationality forever, says another of our listeners. 087 1400 106, the number if you want to get in touch.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the award-winning MG4, the no-compromise electric hatchback with a 450-kilometre range. Recharge your soul.